Thank you, Ross. Can we give her a clap? Sung by Vera Lynn, this song encapsulates part of the spirit of the 1940s. It makes me think of my mother, who married my father on August the 7th, 1940, and saw him leave for the Middle East on August the 10th, not to return until sometime in September 1945, where he came from Italy. Once the Second World War was over, following the surrender of Japan. I think of my mother carrying on as usual, but effectively a single mother after the birth of my brother in 1941, living in the hope and expectation that her husband of 2 days would eventually return at the end of the war. But in the fear that one day the postman would bring the letter that she and every other war, in inverted commas, widow feared, telling her that he would never return home. It's an interesting song. When you hear it sung by the original singer or by Roz and her taking her place, you think of the wife or the girlfriend singing it to the soldier leaving for the war. But if you read the actual words, it was the other way round. It's the soldier singing. Tell them I won't... will you please say hello to the folks that I know? Tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song, We'll Meet Again. It's a soldier singing, not a wife. But one thing is clear. It is saying goodbye, while promising a return, eventually, to somewhere, and urging the one addressed to carry on as usual in the interval. I'll come back to that later. On Wednesday evening, I was in the departure area of Terminal 3 at Heathrow, seeing Joanna off as she travelled to Nigeria to attend the funeral of a relative dear to us both, a farewell of a different kind. Like many others in the place, we said goodbye to each other until the traveller returned. Such scenes can be happy if someone's going on holiday, perhaps, or sad if the departure's permanent, or something between the two, if, for instance, the individual is returning home after a visit. But in all cases, it symbolizes a separation. Someone is leaving. Something has ended, an event or a phase. It could be happy or sad, enjoyable or unpleasant, restful or stressful. The departure could have been a relief or a cause of distress, but it signified an end to something. Today's readings also refer to a departure. In the Gospel, Jesus warned his disciples that his going would be traumatic as it could possibly be. He would be taken by his enemies and killed in a barbaric and protracted public execution, be brought back to life after a short time, and return at some point in the lifetime of his hearers to establish God's kingdom. We're told that the disciples, through the voice of their leader Peter, did not accept that Jesus would die and did not understand about his resurrection and ultimate return. I imagine that having acknowledged that Jesus was Messiah and assumed that this meant he was going to lead them and the rest of his people against the Romans, there was a chance that he and they might be killed in battle. But they didn't expect it to happen, much like my mother felt between 1940 and 1945. However, the chance always existed, and as Jesus' mission inexorably built to its climax in Jerusalem, they must have felt increasingly confident that all would be well. Then came the crushing blow of Calvary followed by the bewildering events of Easter Sunday. Jesus had died and had returned. And for 40 days they enjoyed his presence once more, until the Ascension, the subject of our second reading. Like the song and the departure areas of our airports and railway stations, the Ascension is a goodbye event. Jesus gave his final instructions to his followers, blessed them, and left them. Just now I mentioned the possible scenarios for a departure. This one fitted the third scenario. Jesus was returning home. The cloud was not some kind of heavenly lift carrying Jesus up to the umpteenth floor of the universe. The cloud always represented God, as it did in the Exodus, in the baptism of Jesus, and at his transfiguration. In this case, the cloud enveloped Jesus. In this graphic image, St. Luke is making a simple statement. Jesus returned to his Father, who embraced him and took him home. Remember, Luke is the only evangelist to record the parable of the prodigal son. At the end of that story, the father welcomes his son back, embraces him, takes him home, and throws a party. Jesus wasn't a prodigal son, but he was returning to his father, whom we must assume was happy to see him back. Now, if the story ended there, we could draw a line under the ministry of Jesus and say, it's all over. In that respect, Jesus would have been no different from any other human leader. You can think of any leader you like. They were born, brought up, went into public life, became a leader, created followers, passed on their work to others, and died, becoming merely an exemplar to others. That's true even of the infamous Kim Il-sung, who is still the official president of North Korea, despite dying over 20 years ago. Yes, Jesus' recovery after Calvary would have been remarkable. But if he then died shortly afterwards, it wouldn't have been that remarkable. But the story does not end there. Instead, we have the angels telling the followers of Jesus that they would see him return in glory with the angels of heaven. And in the meantime, they were to obey his orders, in this case, to stay in Jerusalem and await the coming of the Holy Spirit, and then carry the message of Jesus across the world. They knew that Jesus would return and expected him to do so in power, expressed in the fall of human empires and the destruction by fire of the world's cities. They were so convinced of this that St. Paul had to tell them that marriage and child rearing was a permissible state for Christians. However, their conviction was so powerful that when the Emperor Nero was suspected by the Romans of setting fire to the poorer quarters of Rome in his plans to redevelop the city, and Leon, that's Roman planning committees for you, he was able to shift the blame onto an unpopular foreign group with allegedly terrorist aims. A Christian writer commented that the Christians were universally hated and feared by the Roman people, and Nero's attempt to shift the blame for the fire onto them was successful. Looking back over the last few years, it's remarkable how little human attitudes change when times are difficult. We have to learn from this. Now, obviously, after 1985 years, we cannot rekindle the enthusiasm of those first decades of the Christian Church. However, we say every week that we believe that Jesus will return and we'll be saying it again in a few minutes. The question is, do we really believe it? I remember when I was at university, one of my friends decided to test the Bible's teaching on prayer and faith. He prayed that Durham Cathedral would move overnight to a new spot. It didn't happen. He told us next day that he knew it wouldn't. Are we in that position about the second coming? Do we believe it will come? Or do we know that it won't? Can we say, we'll meet again, don't know where, don't know when? If we can say that, and if we do believe that Jesus will return, then we must remember too that Jesus said there would be no warning. We have to live each day as though it is our last. We have a job to do, just as the people left behind by the soldiers in World War II had a job to do. They had to carry on. We had to carry on too. Only we have to carry on the work of Jesus. We have to take the gospel out to all the world and bring all the world back into obedience to God. How we do that will depend on each of us individually. We all have different skills, and we all have a job that God has chosen for us. What does that mean for you? What's the work that Jesus has entrusted you with? Where and how can you carry on what Jesus has started? I found my role for God and the community in working as a reader in this church and as a member of the council. As I said, each person here has a role in God's kingdom. What do you think your role is? That's a question for you. We have to pray that God will show us what that job is and believe that he will give us the strength and courage to perform it. If we all do that, this church will continue to grow in strength and numbers as we, like the early church, continually bring in those who have responded to God's call through us.